It was a city that faced outward. The shipping that came in went toward Charleston or toward London or to the West Indies. We were deeply connected with the West Indies, which, of course, were mostly British colonies there. You know, we had been under royal rule for about 20-something years by then, so the colonial legislature was still in its infancy. You wouldn't have seen paved roads. You would have seen the squares, but not the majestic trees I think that we see now. I think you would have seen a city that was growing. It was certainly multiracial. Even though slavery had been kept out of Georgia until about 1752, it was thriving by 1775. So there would have been a lot of enslaved Africans and African Americans on the streets of Savannah doing all kinds of things, as you can imagine, doing labor, cooking, cleaning. There would have been horses everywhere, which, of course, nowadays horses are just, they draw trolleys. The way your senses would have been assaulted if you'd walked out into the street in Savannah in 1776 would have been a very, very different place. But a vibrant city, one that's growing, one that has a lot of sailors from everywhere, if you can imagine. There would have been a variety of tongues, a veritable babble, if you will, of tongues, races.
You mentioned the role of Haitians. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, during the Siege of Savannah, one of the things that makes it so interesting now is the cast of characters who were involved. There were Haitians here, free black Haitians, who are memorialized, of course, in our monument here in Savannah. There were the French. There were Creoles from other nations. Their enslaved population. I wouldn't be surprised if there were Native Americans involved in some way or another. And, of course, the British, the Americans. It was really a United Nations kind of cast, if you will. And if you can imagine the chaos of a besieged city in October of 1779, the one attempt to retake the city back from the British. And, of course, what the British found out is sort of like what the Americans found out later in Vietnam. You can't capture a map. The British always believed that if they held these key cities, they could defeat the revolution. But they never defeated the armies. They didn't defeat Washington's army. There were always patriots and militia in the Georgia backcountry and the South Carolina backcountry. So even though they took the city, even though there's a huge military event right here in Savannah, it really didn't affect the run of the revolution. And it was maddening for the British. And it's not kind of the linear story that we like to think about. If you follow George Washington from beginning to end, there's this sense of inevitable victory. Had you lived the revolution, particularly here, day by day, I don't think there would have been any sense of this is going somewhere good. I think you would have experienced just utter sheer chaos because government has to have stability to function well, and it didn't have that. So as you can imagine, supplies of goods that people needed just to survive and live were constantly being disruptive. There was no Publix that you just went to. It's not unlike life that we think about today in the aftermath of a hurricane. Supply lines, roads, infrastructure, power, electricity, all these things have been disrupted, and suddenly our phones don't work, Publix doesn't have fresh bread and eggs. Imagine that's how life was continuously for about 7 years for most people who were experiencing the revolution. It was just anarchy, it was chaos, and so when it was all over, I think a lot of people were just, whatever your allegiances had been in 1775 or 76, what you were most thankful for, I think, was peace, some stability. Now let's begin to rebuild. And, of course, that's what Georgians do.